How are you?
I'm Jim Gemmel. I'm a researcher in the Bay Area Research Center.
And so where are we here?
We're in San Francisco, downtown San Francisco, Market Street.
Right. And so we're obviously not in Redmond anymore.
No. And we are in a little corner of a building. You're on the 16th floor here. And we just have a little bit of
a little bit
of office space. Is it? This is the end of the tour. A few feet later, in my office.
Yeah. And what goes on in the labs here?
Well, there's only six full-time people we have, you know, a little...
The usual kitchen.
This is all we get. You know the big fridges you have in Redmond? That's ours.
Yeah.
Wow.
And a couple of servers tucked in the closet.
Do you get free
fridges.
Coats and drinks, too?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right.
But it's a little different. We have to go order from Costco ourselves and bring it in. We got... Whoever's around is the receptionist or the mail boy.
Yeah.
And, there's just a handful of us here. So there's Jim Gray's our manager. He's in there. And Jim is an expert in database, of course, in scalable systems.
Yeah.
And so he has a couple of people working with him. There's a guy named Peter Kuchel who actually lives in Phoenix and is rarely here but works with Jim on that. Tom Barkley's in the corner there who does the Terra server. And we've got Catherine Van Ingen joining us soon, who's another IO expert. And then occasional interns and visitors live down this end. Mm-hmm. And so that's one side, where just databases, scalable servers, things like that. And then there's the media presence group, which is Gordon Bell, Roger, who's walking here, and myself. And we're interested in, we used to do telepresence video, and now we're interested in My Life Bits and saving everything in your life, all media that you can get your hands on.
That's cool.
And there's just three of us. So.
That's what I care about.
Yeah.
Capturing life a gigabyte at a time.
That's great.
So how did this lab start? Why in San Francisco? Why not in Silicon Valley?
Why don't we walk down to my office here?
Okay.
And because I'm thinking with Gordon up here, I'll probably get into demoing you some stuff pretty soon. So we're here in San Francisco because of Jim Gray.
Let me get over here.
So
hey, you guys.
Oh, yeah.
See, this is a...
There you go.
There's a lot of offices who have views of parking lots, but this is pretty nice.
Yeah. It's great. Go ahead and have a seat, guys.
Cool. Actually, I'm going to stay with the
light.
Window to my back.
Yeah. I know the lighting thing.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so Jim Gray is, you know, he appears on the cover of Database Magazine as database legend Jim Gray, and he's an amazing guy.
Yeah.
And so Microsoft wanted to hire Jim, and he's always lived here, had no intention of changing that. And they said, go ahead, open a lab. So he got to open a lab and hire some people.
That's when you know you've arrived, when you can get a company to open a lab wherever you are instead of having to be moved.
And he didn't feel like managing a lot of people, so I think we peaked at around 8 in our head count, and that's as high as he kind of ever wants to go.
Yeah.
So later on, there's another Silicon Valley research lab down at the Silicon Valley campus in Mountain View, and it's grown, you know, headed towards 50 people. I forget how many they got now, maybe 30. But Jim, we started years before them, but Jim had no ambitions to grow. He's quite happy to have a little group here in San Francisco, and here we are.
How long have you been working?
I've been here since when we were still in temp offices, right when they started up. So Jim hired, I think, Tom Barkley and Gordon. There's another guy, Don Slutz, at the start, and I think I was the next guy online. And so there's still a few of us original members kicking around here. So that's since 95.
Wow. And what have you been working on specifically?
In all that time. So when I started, I was hired to be Gordon's sidekick. And Gordon was interested in not having to come to the office. So we said, we're going to work on telepresence. And we messed around with video conferencing. I got interested in multicast, and the M-bone was the hot thing back then. And we were really mad that you couldn't do PowerPoints properly on the M-bone. You had to convert them to PostScript, and it was all this ugly stuff. And so I started working on a multicast version of PowerPoint, which then further took me off on a tangent of I didn't like the multicast protocols they had, and so I invented a new reliable multicast protocol. And then it merged with some effort from Cisco, and we ended up with a protocol called PGM, that eventually shipped in Windows XP. So that was one. And so while I was off doing that, I think Gordon got bored. You know, he was at the high level still with telepresence. And he said, gee, here I am, remote, and I don't have a secretary anymore. I don't have these offices with big file cabinets and everything. I need everything in my PC. He said, I've rediscovered my personal computer. It's my personal computer. I want all my stuff there. So he started scanning all his paper. And his idea was to go paperless. And he scanned and scanned and scanned, and he did it. He eventually, it took a long time, and he hired Vicky, his personal assistant, who you met there. And she did almost nothing but scan for a couple of years. And he got it all in, and then he said, I can't do anything with this. I mean, he had all this stuff. And so that's where I got involved, because he tried a couple of commercial packages at the time. And I should mention that now, today, it would be better. But when he started this, like back in 2000, it was a terrible experience. You couldn't even.
How is it better today?
Well, with things like the MSN desktop search and Google desktop search, you can at least do good full text search on your desktop.
Yeah.
Whereas back then, it was the earlier Doctor products, and they had problems at the time.
It was the Clippy assistant.
MS Search was out, and it was ill behaved. It would go romping through your hard drive, and MSN Desktop Search uses MS Search now, but it's been through a couple of generations. It's much better. He tried something called EnFish and a couple other products, but was always frustrated. And the other thing was, even full-text search wasn't enough. He was getting frustrated, realizing, you know, you need more tools to deal with all this stuff. So that's where I got involved. I said, oh, well, maybe this is some research to do here, that I can look at how do you develop software to support, you know, a lifetime full of captured media, because it also was photos and videos. And he went crazy. He really got obsessive and said, well, what if my whole life was in bits? This is how we got My Life Bits. So he was taking paintings down off the wall and posters and scanning them. And he has some of these coffee mugs he calls, you know, he says, well, this is my $10,000 coffee mug, because, you know, he was an angel investor and all he got was this coffee mug at the end from this company. So he had to scan those, you know, because it might be the only thing left. And he has, like, a presidential medal, and he's scanning. So, I mean, scanning everything he possibly could, and we had all this stuff.
Yeah.
So I started building software, and we hired Roger, who's been doing the heavy lifting and writing 99% of the code for us, and studying what people have thought before, because this is, a lot of it are old ideas. Our inspiration is Vannevar Bush's article from 1945.
Wow.
So, and...
What was the main point of his article?
So Bush was the, I believe, the science advisor to Roosevelt. And he was talking about, okay, the war has ended, and where are we at with science, and we made great contributions, and where are we going to go? And he said, the problem with scientists now, he says, you know, there's so much published, and there's so much specialization, he says, but the problem isn't really that we publish too much. The problem is, how do we make use of what's being published? And so he said, you know, and he was out there. You want to see, I should show you actually, if I can bring this up, dot hardware diagram they have. Actually, that's going to take a minute to fire up. I'll get my backup off here. Show you a hardware diagram of what he had. My life, here we go. Where's Vannevar? Here he is. So this here is the machine that he thought you might have. And he said, well, we have dry film photography, and there'd be these levers, and you could slap things down, and they'd be quickly photographed. Mm-hmm. And he said, you could even have a camera on your forehead and a little button, and if a scientist sees something interesting, he just clicks the button. Mm-hmm. And Bush had a great spec, because he said, I call it full text search a lot. It's not really, because he was still thinking back in his day where you'd have a library like call number, and it's like if you memorize the call number of a word, it could bring up whatever you wanted. So it wasn't really full text search, but the idea was quick access he had. And he was the guy who a lot of people credit with inventing hyperlinks, because he said the human mind doesn't work in this index way. It works by associations. He says we should be able, scientists wants to create trails and going, well, here's this document on this, and I'd like to kind of go to, then you go check out this one, and then go check a bit of this one, and you create these trails, he called them, from which we end up with hyperlinks. And then he also said you should be able to make marginal notes on it, either by writing stuff or by talking and having it recorded, and it would go in this magical machine, and you could get at it all. And so this became our original blueprint of, you know, at least we ought to be able to do what this guy said in 1945. And we had to be careful. At first, we kept saying we've done it, and then reread his paper and realized, no, he thought of something else. He actually had even said that you could have stereo cameras mounted and capture stuff in stereo. So we still got to catch up to that.
Surprised I've never heard of him. It's unbelievable.
There's a link off of our website to the original article. It's a great read. I recommend it to everybody. Just a real visionary article. So from 1945 forward, there was all kinds of people who have thought about what would it be like if everything was digital, and you know, this wasn't digital for him, but if you had everything online and you could access it and organize it, what could you do? And, you know, so part of it is what gave us the web. For him with trails, there's a guy named Ted Nelson in the 60s who started saying, boy, we could revolutionize literature with this, and he had new ideas of, he coined the actual term hyperlink. He had ideas about how we could do versioning of stuff, and he had some cool ideas, and then Engelbart did some stuff, and there was augment. So there's a whole history of people who got into this, did a bit of stuff, contributed some ideas, but it never really went anywhere because, you know, one of the things that Bush had also said is, look, you should just be able to throw stuff into this and never worry about it overflowing. And it had to be cheap and easy. And, you know, his technology wasn't ready. And we realized around the time Gordon started, we did this little breakdown of, well, okay, how much does he usually get, you know? And we did actually, through stuff I've got in here. Let's see if I got. There we go. We said 100 email messages a day, you know, 100 web pages a day. He's on average, how many pieces of paper is he scanning? He reads a book every so often. What if you had that? Click a few photos every day. What if you recorded your telephone and a bunch of comments you made and things like that? And you buy a CD every once in a while and rip it. And just ran those numbers and said, what does that get you? We said, well, practically your whole life would fit in a terabyte. And in fact, at the rate we're going, we figure it would take us 5 years to fill our current 80 gig hard drives. And by that time, we project you'd replace that with a terabyte hard drive. So at sort of current levels, we already were at that point of just throw stuff in the store. You're not going to fill it up. Now, since then, it's easy to dream up new ways of overflowing a terabyte, such as you want to shoot raw photos, you know, and so then it's a factor of 10, your photos are bigger. Or we've got this gadget called the SenseCam. In fact, hey, I just got this back.
Just come in?
I had the Sense. So this is from, have you guys heard of this?
Oh, yeah, we had a video on the SenseCam.
Okay, great. Well, so mine got sick, and I had to send it back to Cambridge to get hospitalized, and it's just come back. So, all right, but you guys already know all about the SenseCam. I'll rip this open when we're talking. But if you have a SenseCam, now all of a sudden you're getting like 1,000 photos a day.
Yeah.
And so that kind of breaks some of these assumptions too. So you can go up by an order of magnitude or maybe two orders of magnitude in these things. If you
the problem with it, because I'm really interested in this, because I already have a weblog that I'm writing every day, and I write 20 times a day on that. And I already have a camera with, you know, that I can email pictures to my photo blog. So I can already capture those things.
Yeah.
But I'm frustrated by my inability to capture other things. For instance, yesterday I gave a talk and I was using Skype to bring somebody remotely in to the conversation.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to capture that kind of audio unless you have two computers, you know, one to do the conversation on and one to do the capturing on.
Yeah.
And same thing with video. It's, you know, it's hard to get this into the computer. It takes another hour, you know, so I can film you for an hour, and then it takes another hour to get it into the computer, you know, and then it takes another hour to make it useful. and so I still see that we need to go a long way in capturing devices in terms of making it easy to capture more stuff and put it into something like this.
Right. Well, you just hit on a couple of dimensions of this problem. So one is capture.
Yeah.
Then another is management, and another is storytelling with it, right? So there's a whole bunch of facets to this, and we held a workshop last fall co-located with ACM Multimedia that we called Continuous Archival and Retrieval of Personal Experience, CARPE.
And we had...
How do you guys come up with these big names?
We had to call it something because we wanted to throw a big umbrella out because there's...
It's an inside joke because Microsoft always names things with big long names.
I should just call it X something if it's Microsoft, right? Actually, I was thinking as a takeoff of Memex, we should just call it MX. And that could be our new code name, you know, but... Anyhow, we wanted to throw a big umbrella to grab. There's people in the pervasive community who are doing stuff related to this. There's people in the wearable community doing this. There's people who are, you know, multimedia type guys. There's personal information management, like information retrieval type. So you have to bring all that together because, like you're saying, gee, there's the cat. It's hard to capture it. Hard to get in the computer. It's hard to manage it once it's there. It's hard to tell a story once you've got it. It's hard. So there's all these pieces. And UI experts, unless we have people who know how to build UIs, people on how to do user testing, like it's so easy to fail at this. And even performance. So that's where us guys who are into system stuff. You know, you can build the flashiest looking thing, and if it's slow, people go, okay, I'm never going to use it. And so anyhow, it was great. We had a great workshop. We sold out. And had people from all over the world coming, and they're all excited. We're starting to plan the next one. And so this is way beyond what just our little team can tackle. This is, I think, you're going to see research all over the world get into this. And there's a lot of open problems. Oh, and then there's privacy questions that are raised.
Yep.
And what to do with that. There's legal questions that come up. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, can we do any technology to help the privacy and the legal questions? And yeah. So there's lots and lots for us to work on.
Yeah. And then the information overload, you know, if you got five people who you're watching their life bits, how do you absorb it? How do you deal with it? How do you make use of, like, their work?
Right.
And collaborate with them.
And there's different...
And find the important stuff.
And there's different theories that people have about this, and I think we need different groups to take different approaches and try them out. You know, I just was at a meeting, and there was some guys from MIT, and they think, oh, people really want to customize their information and do this kind of stuff, which I totally disagree with, but I don't know. And I wish them all the success in the world. It's like, yeah, build it, try it, let's find out, you know. And, you know, when you talk about how do you deal with someone else's life bits, we have a philosophy towards that where we're saying, look, the way it's got to be, first of all, it can't be a lot of work to do all this editing and all this kind of stuff, or you just won't do it. And so as much has to be automatic, we've got to pick it up while you feel like it and so on. And so we have a model of, okay, the more you capture, the more correlation you can do. So for instance, if you have GPS, then I know where it is. If you have a good clock, I know when it is. If you have, you know, the more things I can bring in, so that when I
well, let's launch into mid demo here now. If this thing's woken up, I'm way out of sequence, but
that's cool. We're totally about being out of sequence.
But you get to edit afterwards.
No, we don't edit.
Oh, you don't edit?
Hell no. I'm too lazy to edit.
I'll put this on the big screen here. And let's go to my map view.
The whole thing about Channel 9 is to play the video straight through. It's more believable and it's easier to produce.
So you're going
to
play this whole thing?
Probably.
It's long, eh?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to type in Santa Ana, CA. This is some code that the guys from the Worldwide Media Exchange, WMX.
Charles
Story.
Nice to meet you.
It's an honor to meet you.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing? So we're filming live, so.
You're going live and you got a good demo here?
Yeah, we're going to get the...
Yeah, we almost say it's not a demo anymore. It's just the way we're using the system.
Yeah.
It's just great.
Wow. Well, do you want to continue where we were going?
You're in.
Because I could, when we get you introduced.
Okay, well, there's a lot of things to see. And just, I mean,
sure,
you're in.
Sure,
I just continue to go. You've been looking at all the features, right?
We've been kind of rambling.
Yeah,
so I give them a little bit of background on Vannevar Bush and how you got started and how the lab got started.
Yeah. Right.
And then he just said, you know, how would you look at someone else's life bits and, you know, how much work that was. And I was starting to explain the approach of lots of correlation, very lightweight markup, and things being automatic. So I was just going to show them as an example.
Right.
This map here, so I put a GPS in my car. Let me dim the map out. So you can see the pink dots here are where I went, and here's where photos were taken. And so I'll bring a little bit of map back in here for you again. And then we can say, okay, we segment this by time, by where there's gaps in time, so I can look at sort of little sub-trips in it, and we can animate and say, okay, well, how did I, what's the time order here and how I traveled? And okay, I spent a while at the hotel there, and then, you know, moved on in this kind of thing.
Yeah, we can tell if you're at the bar or not.
There you go. Yeah. And so the cool thing with this...
And your wife can, you know, check in on you and see, hey, you know, you weren't where you were saying you were going to be, you know.
They're all blocking all this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's that angle for sure. Yeah. But the cool thing here is if you look at this... Now, I didn't have the sense cam already then, but suppose I have a sense cam. I'm just moving around. I know where I am. I've got my calendar. I know these things that I did because I was down at this tournament with my kids for sports, and I know when the games were and this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. There's the story. You know, why should I have to do any work to tell that story? And now all you need to know is maybe what are the highlights? And a lot of that we could figure out if you looked at your video and just said, what are the portions that you played a whole bunch? There's the highlights. So if I come back to your life later, I should just say, show me the highlights. And it would bubble up to the top and then say, he had a great time in San Francisco, and he did this and this, and I see the highlight ones. And if I get interested, then I drill in. I say, well, what other photos do you have of that event on the calendar? Oh, yeah, I want to look at those. Now I'll look at the next ranked ones. And it's like, okay, well, I'm so interested in this little piece, I even want to look at the blurry photos, which usually are hidden from me. You know, so at the top level, you just have this stuff marked good. And
one problem with both audio and video, since I'm playing with podcasting and video, obviously, on Channel 9, is I can't link to a specific part of the video. Like you said, you know, this is going to be a long video, right? So half an hour, an hour, or whatnot. And if somebody on Channel 9 wants to link to it from their blog and say, hey, I really love this demo that I just saw, and they want to link to just that five-minute segment of the video, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to do that today.
Right.
Using, you know, our web technologies.
And we have to get there. Let me give credit to Kentaro Toyama. He did a Tech Fest demo a couple of years or something he called Cliplets. And he said, look, if video has to become a first-class citizen just like text in our OS. And most people bite off video usually in little five-second clips, you know. We need to just be able to have chunks of them. That's got to be our granularity. So even if the store is one big video, you got to be able to access it like that, see little thumbnails of them, refer to them. And part of it's easing the video chore, too, of saying, instead of opening an editor and getting in this, I just grab these 50 in a row if it's a longer than 5 seconds and say, yeah, this is what I want, you know, and you're not too worried about the cutoff points so we can refer to each other. I'm a big believer in that. I think we need to get that up to the highest level. We, you know, another thing...
And there's a hierarchy there because of, you know, the fact that the stuff is all on this idea of a long tape as opposed to, gee, 5 minutes of that have to do with the trip or a half an hour trip to the zoo, and that's one episode. And then within that, there are the cliplets, but until you get it down to the cliplets, it's useless. I mean, video is hopeless at this stage, and it's really up to Microsoft to make that all in this other form. That can be used.
In fact.
Yeah.
Here's my little stack here.
Yeah.
I call this my black hole. Because I came to Gordon, I said, video goes in, it never comes out.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I can't be bothered to get these tapes
and
view them.
Yeah.
So we said, we're my life bits, we can handle this. Uh-huh. Let's digitize these suckers. Right. I had the digital already, but I had them on my hard drive. It's still a black hole because I have these huge tapes, and like you say, it's impossible to access the pieces that we need. And so this is where we said, you know, how do we get it out of the black hole? And we think that you know, surprisingly, the killer app.
I got it out of the black hole and put it on Channel 9.
Yeah, but
and actually, when you put something in public space, you actually get some interesting effects because people link to stuff that they find interesting.
Yeah.
And then Google and Yahoo and MSN can help you find some of it.
Yeah, and if like they can refer to those clips.
If you go to Google and search on tablet PC video, you'll find that our video is number one, right? So, you know, which helps you find some useful stuff out there. But it's still, it's a long way from what it should be. Yeah. And the problem is you can't link into a video. You know, like when you go to Google and you search on tablet PC video, you find our Channel 9 video, but
it happens to be in the text.
Maybe that's an hour-long video, but the reason everybody linked to that was the 5 minutes of demo that we did, you know, at minute 22.
Right.
You know, and nobody can link into minute 22
because there's no way currently to add metadata.
Hold on, you guys. You could. Let me argue that the way you should be dealing with this is that that you've, instead of doing it, putting it up in as a whole video, that you in fact do the work to put the segments there, and then
I heard the dirty word there.
And you
you can automate this.
Yeah.
You can automate this. Well, actually, so we started doing was we take our tapes. We stole a code out of Movie Maker that at least chunks up the pieces. And so even if you just occasionally turn that off, just on and off to indicate breaks, that's a big clue. And then there's also code that they have based on audio signal, whatever. They can segment it further. So we can break it down. It's in smaller chunks now, right?
Yeah.
And then even with that, you could even just write some code that just said, well, every 20 seconds I'm going to chop it up.
Yeah.
The hard part then is then piecing it all back together when you want it to flow.
You have to have some metadata there that talks about.
But that's that's what we're doing. This is my screensaver running here now. Yeah. Because we said, look, it's this black hole. It's half of it flips between photos and then videos.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a random maximum 30-second chunk out of some spot in a longer video and play you that. And again, this whole user feedback thing, you know, lightweight, kind of like it's not work. While my stuff is in screensaver mode here, we can go in and make text comments or rate the thing. We can say, oh, yeah, I like that thing. I'm giving it some thumbs up here on the bottom.
Fine.
You know, make audio annotations, kind of stuff. And it's fascinating. This in my home, my kids gravitate to it. It's like, this is cool. This is fun. Hey, neat stuff comes up from our history. And we go, we talk about it. We say things about it. We rate it. And it's this cool thing to do.
Really.
And so instead of this big editing chore that you would have, it's just this, like it just gets hauled out for you. And when you feel like it, you just, you know, say a few things, which turns out to actually be fun.
Yeah. And you're, for example, so if we have a clip in this setting, in this environment here, and I add metadata to it, that's then searchable. Which then makes it all useful.
Yeah.
So that would be wonderful.
That's right. And also, so this whole feedback, so between the explicit thumbs up and just the usage of it, you said something about it. Mm-hmm. So now if we had some kind of rule like, well, the good stuff has the thumbs up, tends to have annotations, it's stuff that you, because if I go in and I say, oh, that was cool, wait a minute, let's play it again, I'm recording everything I do on this machine too. So we know that I played it over again. Mm-hmm. And so now when, you know, I die and you said, what do you do to come to someone's life bits? Well, percolate up the video that was used a lot, that was interesting, that had markings on it, show them that. But there's all the links, right? So we know the time. You go, you say, what happened at the same time as this? And
so are you capturing all web pages you visit on your computers and everything?
Yeah, here. So let's, boy, this is great.
So how are you
going
doing
through it? Going through my demo site.
What kind of software is running? What are you doing? Do you have like a keyboard logger?
We have that also. So we have from the Vibe team, which is a research team in Redmond, we have their Vibe logger, which is tracking what windows in the foreground, how much key and mouse activity it received. You know, so really the sense of what are you doing with the PC. We also log everything that we do in My Life Bits so we know what queries you're executing, how long they took, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then with the browser, so my browser finally woke up here. If I'm off browsing, I guess I shouldn't go to Google, hey? I'll do a MSN search, My Life Bits. And, we don't need Google there.
And
hey, I talk about Google all the time on my
phone. Oh, we don't like those guys. Up here.
Intercompany rivalry.
It's passé now, eh? Nice. So this here is our toolbar. You see when I hover on this, it says web archiving is enabled. Yeah. And that means that every page I visit will be saved. Not the URL, the actual page. So if I go, I actually have a little demo here, 404 error. I'm going to hit a web page here that's no longer on the web. And my LifeBits is going to kick in and notice that and say, the requested page could not be found. Would you like to open the most recently archived version and set? Yep. And so it's going to go dig off in our archive and find the copy that we have of that one. So we're off.
Somebody else just walked in the room. Who are you?
Hi, I'm the guy that wrote
it. Doing it.
There you go. That's yeah, Roger Luther.
He tells me when I can do something.
So this is the page that's no longer on the web.
Okay.
And then again, same lines we said, look, when you feel like it, you got to be able to mark things up. So we put right in this toolbar. You can click and type a text annotation. We can do audio annotations, too. You don't want to edit.
So my LifeBits is really a toolbar?
Well, it's a whole bunch of tools. Okay. So there's a web capture tool. We got instant messenger capture. We've got a telephone recording system that if you phone his office, you'll hear recording. That's because it's California law.
Ah.
You have to warn it's being recorded.
Okay.
Oh, here he goes.
Jim, this is sweet. Why don't you get this?
We've got files going in. We've got a shell text and voice annotation, web page capture, instant messenger capture, interface to email so that it knows what email. You can do stuff with that. Telephone capture we just mentioned. We played around with recording TV. This is in the early days of TiVo, and we said, what would it feel like if you had a lot of storage? So we recorded like a terabyte and half of TV just to see, what does that feel like? Turns out, overwhelming. That's what it feels like. And then we recorded radio, too. We said, why can't we time shift radio just like we record that? I had a little pocket PC player that I discovered I nearly killed myself trying to drive and look at this interface. So we made it talk to us and, you know, tell us what program we were playing. Legacy apps so that we had to sync with the file system. That's been a real nuisance to us, but we watch what files you got. Screensaver, I showed you. GPS import, map display, SenseCam, you know about, and this vibe logging. So my LifeBits software is a big suite of tools, and at the heart is this database engine that's holding everything together for us.
We're finding out about the database in the afternoon with Jim Gray.
So. And everything's searchable.
Yeah.
Your whole life is searchable.
Yeah.
You can add metadata to every bit of it.
Right.
To the extent that,
is that the goal?
Things like telephone capture, you can't search on audio. I mean, we're limited by either the metadata or the fact that there's text in it. If there's text in it, we can find it.
So what he's saying there is that we built in speech to text, but for telephone quality, it's a no-go today.
Yeah.
But we say, hey, no problem. We'll record it. Someday it will work, and then we'll have it, and we can search that stuff. But
see, the difference of what's going on here versus, you know, Jim just gave a talk at a group, a thing called the Vanguard Group that we're involved, you know, I've been involved with, and these guys have been there, and they look at the new apps and things, says, oh, man, Picasa is a great thing. And we said, yeah, it's fine, but it's an isolated app. And so what's happening and why WinFS is so super critical is that everybody's building these friggin' databases for, you know, mail, I mean, which is the biggie, a picture database, like Adobe's got a nice one and Picasa's got one and we've got one.
Yeah.
And so there's another little island, but it's all the indices are within that framework, and you can't cross-correlate can't use any of the other data in anything else. You know, as money, not, so you've got these very big databases that are islands and are not interconnected.
And a lot of the databases now are going to the cloud, right? You know, I mean.
There's that problem too.
Blogger and MSN Spaces. And,
yeah, right.
Well,
that's always Pixo. For 50 years. That's been the fight between central versus PCs, and you know now that the company has gone cloud, we're back. Hey, wait a minute. There's this thing called the personal computer, and it's all right here. So you do have that dichotomy.
So let me give you an example of things hooked up here. So well, we talked about web page annotations. So here's a web page I visit, and this pane above says, "What have you got that's related to this?" So I've got a voice annotation, and I got another annotation. So I'll do the voice one here. Let's see, I got to unmute.
This is the home page of Marcia Bates. I had a meeting with
So this is what I was just talking about, where I can just be at web pages and just talk whenever I feel like it. Or another thing, I used to have all these folders. Like, here's one, August 2003, with a bunch of photos. Mm-hmm. We can do standing queries now. You'll be able to do this with WinFS. And now it found a lot more, because it said find all photos with a date in August instead of me having to file them. Mm. Or here's another folder. XP Photo Wizard asked me, what do you want to call these things? I said, oh, it's Jesse's Wedding Reception and Other. So a couple shots of the dog get in there with it. In my life bits, I can go look at Jesse's Wedding Reception in my calendar, and it will bring up a whole bunch of photos that were actually taken then. And now I don't get the dog in there. And we can, again, correlation, when you bring in your photos, we can say, huh, are these your photos? Because they were taken at the same time as this event in your calendar. Am I allowed to hook them up? Like, you don't have to do the work there. Another example we like to give is, you know, going beyond even the full text search we've got. Let's say Gordon talks to his real estate agent, and they're selling his house, and she says, let's price it, and here, look at this web page, Gordon. They're on the phone. Look at this web page. Here's a comparable home. Now, fast forward a couple of months, he wants to see that web page again. He says, yeah, what was that house? What's he going to search for? House? Real estate? He'll get like a bazillion hits, right? Mm-hmm. So he goes and he says, okay,
or who's even the date?
Who's my real estate agent? It's Connie. And what related items do I have? Well, via caller ID, I know the phone call she was in. And if I wanted to, I could listen to the call again.
You can create the market for the property.
Yeah, you can create the market for the property. But even short of listening to her, we can say, what happened at the same time? So I can say, take me to the time overlap of that phone call. What happened at the same time as that phone call? And, oh, did I not click it? Yeah, I did click it. And here is, voila, this web page that no longer is on the web, but we have a copy of it. And you can go back and look at that again. So how we get there? We had these links, right, from the person to the phone call they're in, and then we have the database to help us, you know, use indices to look up things quickly, find overlaps, find things that happen at the same time. It's great. So anyhow, you mentioned we can hook things together, you know, across
this,
stores.
To me, this
right?
looks like the blogosphere 3.0. Yeah.
Is that right?
Because, I mean, today I have the ability to write text and maybe a rudimentary picture, but I can't put video, I can't record Skype, I can't do a whole lot of what you're doing, and I can't keep web pages around, I can't say cache this web page and stick it somewhere. This is really neat stuff.
And going across, so this is the thing, going from contacts to recorded phone calls to web pages, this is what we're saying about, they're not often these different data silos sure. anymore, and it's the correlation between them that's so powerful. You know? There's other things the database can do too, where I had this, so this is the actual experience of mine, where I said, oh, there was this email thread we had on storage, and that guy said that really cool thing, and I wanted to find that.
And so, you're generally looking for the guy, either the guy or this, or were you looking for the guy, or were you looking for the...
Well, I want the email. The question is, what did you remember? So in the previous example, what did I remember? I remembered I was having a conversation with my real estate agent when I saw that page.
Right.
So then we went back to the person and found the time and got to it. So it's all like, what is the hook? Whatever the hook
and
is that. Do you remember where? No. Go to the map and look on the map and say, okay, oh yeah, there's that photo I took that day. Now what happened around the same time as that photo? Or in this case, all I remember is it's a thread about storage. So when I do a search on storage, I get 5,400 hits. But, you know, using the database, we've got all these attributes on things. So I can refine and say, oh, well, let's only look at email. Well, it's still 2,000, so that's a little bit heavy duty. But
You don't get much email, right?
Let's look. This is email. This is email that matches.
Can I forward my email to you?
This is email that matched the word storage.
Ah, just on storage. Okay. I was like,
yeah. Now
you're going to drill down.
So now I look at who's it from, right, which I can quickly do at the Davis, and this is ranked by the most common people. So by the time you knock out me and Gordon and Gray, you know, we've gotten rid of half the emails. And even back when I did this, the guy's name appeared in the first half of the list. Now today, because I've had more emails on storage, I have to go on the second half. When I saw the name, I went, oh, yeah, Kilroy. He said that cool thing. And then I click on it. So sometimes you're just kind of, you got these little memory hooks, and you go, well, I remember this thing over there, and then I link across, and then I refine, and you're kind of navigating your way around through this personal web of information.
Yeah, I think there's that. I think of the one of the biggest problems is who, I can't remember a name of that person. When I want to go, whether an expert or somebody you want to send a question to or an email to or something, and it's right on the tip of your tongue. There's half a dozen people within Microsoft that fit that. I know them really well, but I never can recall their names. But I do it by some other hook of they're working on this, they're in the high performance computing group, or they work for somebody or something like that, and you're using all of that other knowledge. It's this idea of a little bit of a thread somehow to do it, and one of the threads I think is once we need picture. You know, the system will let us have pictures of everybody that's in our contact. And so it would be great to have all of those contacts filled in. So as a last resort, oh yeah, I remember who that is. And then you go through and look for all the people whose name's Jim. And I know his name was Jim, but let's look at all the pictures of.
I remember people by their web addresses.
Yeah.
Which is really, because I
that's
like,
a, yeah. You, so essentially you build in
like
a
Harry blog is?
Well, yeah, Harry Pearson is, what is Harry Pearson? He's DevHawk. And the first time I read him and linked to him and built a relationship to him, I knew him as DevHawk. And I had no clue he was Harry Pearson. So when I came and worked at Microsoft, I met Harry Pearson, and I didn't even make the correlation that he was DevHawk, you know, until like a month later when we were just talking about blogging, and he says, oh yeah, I read the DevHawk. So I go, you what? Because it was a completely different, experience of meeting the person and then yeah, reading their persona on their site. So
anyway, that's, you got to have a database to do all of that stuff, and you never know when, what the link is going to be to make it happen. So I think there's a number of people working in this area now, and very few of them have gotten to the point where there's really, we only see one way to do it, and that is you start with a core database, and then everything fits within that. You know, if you start dealing with anything that's in the file domain, even if it's just logging of events, well, you're going to end up with some kind of a structure there that's fundamentally, you know, it's an ad hoc database that they put together.